Welcome to the historic studies session. We have a few people coming in. I'm going to make the introduction short and sweet so there's more time for the actual presenter. The first presentation, first presentation is Jerry Fabris of the Thomas Edison National Historic Park, and he's going to talk about Building 5, the music room up there. He's been handing out, there's a handout, I don't know if you've gotten it or not, but you know, make sure you have your handout because his talk will coordinate to some of the maps and the room plots there. So we got Jerry coming up right now.
Thanks, Mike. Hello. This talk is pretty much totally based on photos, so I encourage you to move up to get a good view of the photos. And also, as you're coming in, be sure to grab a handout, because the handouts are key as well. They're on the table back there. Okay, as you might have noticed on the title page here, Edison National Historic Site has a new name. It's now called Thomas Edison National Historical Park. Still getting used to saying it. As before, the park includes both Edison's West Orange Laboratory and home, where he worked and lived from the late 1880s until his death in 1931. The laboratory closed since 2003, for a renovation project, is scheduled to open this fall. When the tours begin again, a much larger portion of the laboratory will be open to the public. In past years, tours went through only the first floor of the main lab building. The new tour will cover all three floors. Today, I'll focus on one particular room to be featured on the new tour, which is located in the front of the building on the third floor. Did everyone get a handout? They're on the table back there. If you look at your handout, I'll coordinate what you're looking at on those floor maps to this photo. If you look in the top corner, you'll see I labeled Main Street and Lakeside Avenue. This is Main Street, and here the side street is Lakeside Avenue. And you'll see on the Lakeside Avenue side of the room I'm talking about has four windows. The Main Street side of the room has six windows. See on the map. This room is a significant location in the history of recorded sound. During the late 1880s and early 1890s, it was called Room 13. Theo Vongemann, Walter H. Miller, and Henry Hagen made some of the earliest commercial music recordings there. During the 1910s and 1920s, it was called the Music Room. Edison used the space to evaluate artists and repertoire for release on Diamond Disc Records. Since Edison's lifetime, however, the room has been behind the scenes, used for museum collection storage. Over the past year, I've been doing much of the hands-on work to refurnish it to its historic appearance for the new tour. Throughout Edison's 44 years in the laboratory, he changed the configuration of the room a number of times. My purpose today is to illustrate what we know about the interior structure of the room, how it was used historically, and to provide some insights into our process of refurnishing it. I'm not the first person to take a close look at how the room changed during its historic period. In 1998, National Park Service conservator Barbara Yoakum published a study of the entire building. By looking at historic photos, archival documents, and the building itself, she systematically dated as best possible each major structural element, walls, floors, windows, doors, etc. Since this report, I've located a few additional historic photographs of Room 13, so I can add a few details to our understanding of the room. I'll now show you 14 different historic photos of the room arranged in chronological order. I've numbered them photos 1 through 14, corresponding to the numbered floor maps on your handout. On your maps, the red lines show the viewpoint in the room for each photo. I also labeled the photos. You'll see in the top left corner there it says photo 1. Photo 1, this is the earliest surviving photo of the room. It dates to circa 1889, around the time when Vongerman, Miller, and Hagen used the room to produce wax cylinder recordings of music sold by the North American Phonograph Company. They kept a recording ledger known as the First Book of Phonograph Records. The photo appears to be semi-staged for the camera. In particular, it shows an obsolete tinfoil phonograph here and an Edison talking doll, both positioned prominently in the center right of the shot. Otherwise, though, it illustrates what may have been actual wax cylinder recording work in progress. The mouth of a recording horn hangs over a grand piano. The small end of the horn connects to a battery-powered Class M-type phonograph. The piano on the left is a Steinway. The piano on the right is a Weber. At this point in time, the entire width of the floor section, of the front section, of the third floor was one single large wide-open room, as you'll see on your maps. You see in the photo, there's no paint on the walls. The original floorboards run lengthwise from front to back. Okay, photo 2. I found this photo in a journal called American Electrician, published June 1896. So this depicts roughly 7 years after the previous photo, around the time of formation of the National Phonograph Company. During the mid-1890s, you see references to the room as the Phonograph Experimental Department. Recording work that happened there at this time was experimental in nature as opposed to production of records for sale. I don't have names for the individual scene in this photo. It appears to be the same two grand pianos, the Weber piano on the right and the Weber piano on the left and the Steinway on the right. Structurally, the room has not changed. You'll notice up here a six-lamp chandelier fixture hanging from the ceiling. This chandelier appears also in the next photo, photo 3. I scanned this photo from a nice clear print in the Edison Archive. The same image was published in an article by Francis Arthur Jones in the Strand magazine of May 1905. Individuals in the photo are identified as Albert Kiffer, over here, Theo Vongerman, who managed the room, and George Bohm, the pianist. You see an upright piano mounted on a wooden platform. Various sizes and shapes of recording horns are throughout the room. A major structural addition is a new small room over here, built within the larger room. It has a peculiar round hole constructed into the wall here. The purpose of the hole is unclear. Our best guess is that it was an opening for a recording horn to isolate the machine from the musician or vice versa. Okay, slide 4. This next photo, I believe, was taken on the same day as photo 3, showing three of the same people wearing the same clothes. I located it in a biography published in 1907 titled Thomas Alva Edison, 60 Years of an Inventor's Life by Francis Arthur Jones, the same author who wrote the Strand Magazine article. In this book, the author quotes Theo Vongerman, quote, "All the work done in this room is concentrated on making better apparatus for recording and reproducing, better raw materials for cylinders, better records, both blank and molded. It is here every effort at improving and advancing the present way of phonographic production and reproduction is made. We are constantly experimenting with new records, new speakers, new horns or funnels." The two photos, I don't think they've ever been published together, but as far as it looks to me like they were meant to represent before and after. This one represents recording, and that one represents reproduction or listening. Photo 5. The next surviving photo of the room dates to circa early or mid-1911. This is around the time when Edison was promoting new uses of concrete, including concrete houses. The focal point of the photo is a model concrete house. The details of interest to this presentation, however, are on the periphery. Looking over here, the function of this bench-like structure on the left is unknown. I'm wondering if maybe it's another one of those platforms for a piano. On the right, we see evidence of continuing use for phonograph-related purposes up here. These are cans for master cylinders. A hole in the wall. The hole in the wall is visible here, although they've covered it over. A major structural change is evident up here. A new wall has been constructed joining the left side of the small room, creating a second small room. Okay, photo 6. This might be the same day. Again, the focal point of the photo is related to concrete. These are concrete blocks. In the background on the right, over here, you can see the front Lakeside Avenue corner of the room is still open. It later gets closed off. Okay, photo 7. You may have seen this image before. The company used it for advertisements. It's dated September 1911, around the time of the introduction of the diamond disc phonograph and record. Edison is sitting in a small area partitioned along the courtyard side of the room opposite Lakeside Avenue. He's listening to a disc phonograph taking notes. On the upper left of the photo, over here, you see a circa 7-foot high partition topped with a wood-framed wire mesh screen. We're not entirely certain at what point this courtyard side partition went up or how far it extended into the room. Okay, photo 8. This is another shot on the same day, September 1911, same location, and again, they're listening to a diamond disc phonograph. Photo 9. The next three photos date from the spring of 1914, moving us ahead another 3 years in time. During the era of the diamond disc record, Edison personally took a lead role in choosing the artists and repertoire for record releases. Much of this evaluation work took place in the large room, known by this time as the music room. He often auditioned compositions by listening live to music sung by a vocalist or played on the piano. By 1914, they've painted the upper walls and ceiling a light color. On the upper right, over here, you see the other side of the partition topped with the wood-framed wire mesh. From this point on, these 9-drawer-by-2-drawer filing cabinets show up again and again in the room. Photo 10. This shows what might be the same day as the previous shot looking in the opposite direction. The grand piano is a different Steinway. In the background are stacks of sheet music. In the top right corner up here, you see the same chandelier that appears in the 1890s photos. Photo 11. Photo 11 was also taken in the spring of 1914. By this time, a third small room on the Lakeside Avenue side of the building had been constructed by extending the wall to close the corner section. This functioned for a time as Fred Ott's experimental room. His work was not solely related to sound recordings. This is the one and only photo we have of this side wall over here, which I assume is the same wall of the circa 1905 small room with the large hole. This is 3 years later, January 1917. After the disastrous fire in the phonograph works, December 1914, throughout the entire complex, fire-resistant steel frame windows replaced the old wood frame windows. You see those, the steel frame windows here. The last major structural changes to the music room occurred in 1916, just a few months before this photo. We have the purchase order for new floorboards, which were installed perpendicular over the 1887 floorboards. Milk glass shaded ceiling suspended light fixtures replaced the old six lamp chandelier. The walls and ceiling got a fresh coat of light colored paint. Clarence Hayes managed the music room at this time. Having a background as both a vocalist and a bookkeeper, Hayes organized Edison's evaluation comments, sang vocal compositions, and supervised assistance. He also acted as a liaison for information passed between Edison, the recording studio in New York City, the advertising department, and manufacturing departments. This photo shows four employees. Hayes is here speaking on the telephone. Two women do paperwork, and a pianist plays a composition. Edison is absent from the photo, but the place where he sat is evident. A notepad and pencil rest on the table in front of four disc phonographs, left to right a Victor Victrola, an Edison C250, a Columbia Graphinola, and an Edison A250 or B250. A hearing aid made from a fireside horn hangs in front of the C250 machine. That's this here. Edison listened to recordings through the horn to compensate for his hearing impairment. As he listened, he took notes. The piano appears to be the same Steinway that is seen in the earliest photo from 1889. Photo 13. The last two historic photos reveal no major changes to the room during the 1920s. This is a publicity shot of the Ernest Stevens Trio, circa 1923. And lastly, photo 14. Here, circa 1925, an elderly Edison listens to Helen Davis singing and Victor Young is at the piano. And I'll say a few words about refurnishing the room. After Edison's death in 1931, the third floor of the laboratory came to be known as the attic. Museum curators gathered artifacts there for safekeeping. Organizing the collection onto shelving, they moved objects from room to room, storing original laboratory furniture side by side with other donations from outside the lab. In planning the new tour, we had to decide how to refurnish room 13. We considered what era and what aspect of the story to represent. The late 1880s period of wax cylinder recording certainly rated high in terms of historic significance. However, as we've seen, many structural features of the 1887 room were altered significantly during Edison's lifetime. Equally important, most of the surviving laboratory furniture in the museum collection dates to the later time period, items that Edison had not discarded by 1931. The 1910s and 1920s story of selecting artists and repertoire for diamond discs is compelling. Since we could recreate this scene with a remarkably high degree of authenticity, we decided to restore the room to the time period of the diamond disc. Looking again at the 1917 photo, I'll next show you a back-to-back comparison of the 1917 photo with a photo of the same viewpoint. We're no longer using the maps. I used this 1917 photo as a guide for choosing furniture from collection storage. Take a moment to look at the furniture in this photo. Okay. Now hold on to your hats. This photo was taken by ARSC member Michael DeVecca last year. His photo shows the work in progress of refurnishing the room. This is where we were last summer, at the point when we had just moved most of the large furniture items into place. I believe the Steinway grand piano is the same artifact that appears not only in the 1917 photo, but also in the 1889 and 1896 photos. The other furniture items here are original to the laboratory, though in most cases it's not possible to identify items uniquely to confirm that they were original to the room. This past winter and spring, volunteer Sean Coakley and I did detailed cleaning of all the period rooms and large artifacts on the third floor. This month we'll begin filling in the details with remaining artifacts, mostly the smaller items. Some key pieces are still needed. The two carpets shown in the 1917 photo no longer survive. The recording artist photographs that hung on the walls have not been located, although the frames that held the photos do survive. We plan to purchase reproduction carpets and photographs. We'd also like to have the walls cleaned. Another missing item is the Columbia graphinola right here. With help from the Michigan Antique Phonograph Society, we've located a collector who's offered to donate a similar-looking graphinola for the room. I'll end with a quick overview of dates for the surviving structural elements of the room. Original to 1887 construction of the building are the exterior perimeter wall and ceiling boards, the radiators, like this one here, the columns and beams. The steel frame windows, as I said, were installed in 1915 after the fire. The floorboards, doors, and lighting fixtures date to the 1916 changes. We believe the paint on the walls dates to before Edison's death, though we don't have a definite date for the last time it was painted. The sprinkler system is new, installed during the current renovation, replacing sprinklers dating to 1921 and 1922. Similarly, for protection reasons, the fire detectors are new, although these replace a set installed in the 1970s. Here, actually in this photo, they were in the midst of replacing the detectors. The HVAC duct that you see over here is also new, installed during the current renovation. So the room has layers of history. Even with the 1917 furnishings in place, when you stand in the room, it's not hard to imagine beneath the surface back to 1887. I hope you'll visit when the park opens later this year. The music room is just one of many stops on the expanded tour. Thanks. Anyone? Is it possible to hand Ward the mic or step up to the mic? Okay.
Jerry, is there any evidence that Edison did any recording at all in the period to which you renovated the room? I know that there's that cylinder that's purported to be Edison tinkering at the piano.
That's an interesting story. There are recordings here and there. They weren't doing regular recording during the 1910s or 20s, but like that piano recording, that I could talk for a half hour about that, but there's a story that I think the date of that one is about 1912 or so, where the story is the employees worked 6 days a week, Monday through Friday, half day Saturday morning. And one Saturday, someone working in the room with a hole, he was working on phonograph-related work. He stayed late Saturday and had a recording machine set up. And Edison sometimes, in private, would tinker on the piano. And at least according to the story that he wrote, he was able to record Edison playing the piano. We have a recording of Edison plunking on the piano. I can't say. It's not something I've really studied.
Yeah, just
wondering.
Dave? During the period of time when they were recording up there, were there ever any acoustical modifications done to the room? Is there any evidence of that? I didn't see any in the photos.
Yeah, I don't think so. Although it's the room, one thought is it's the room farthest away from the machine shop. So that could be a reason why it is where it is, to avoid the noise of the machine shop.
Let me ask about your process. Is the renovation of this room, was it done to a specific written plan of renovation? Was the plan specific to this room, or was the plan for the entire building? And was the document that you showed, the 1998 document, was that the plan of restoration to this condition?
That 98 historic furnishings report what we're doing now was not the specific end result of that report, but that report was intended just to give us factual data. The reason the site has been closed for so long has been related to the HVAC. They're putting a new elevator in up the back end of the building, the fire escape, and the more kind of heavy-duty related work like fire detectors, sprinklers. My part of it, which is setting up the room, it's been on hold for quite a while, and that's why I just have been working on this just for the past year.
To what degree are you following a specific pre-prepared restoration plan, and to what degree are you having to exercise your own judgment on restoration on an improvisational week-to-week, month-to-month basis in order to do the job right?
We had a furnishings plan done in the 90s, although in the 90s they were not thinking that the third floor would be open. So they did a report there was a structure report about the structural elements. There was also the furnishings report included information about how the third floor was used. But it's beyond that, I planned in the last couple of years the setup of the period rooms on the third floor. The third floor has sort of been my task in terms of setting them up with the artifacts. So. Yeah?
Who's funding your whole project?
Are you asking about the historic furnishings or about the construction work?
The whole noodle.
We've been getting a lot of help from the Thomas Alva Edison Foundation, which is a branch of the Charles Edison Fund, which is Charles Edison's estate. And they, when we started, got a lot of help from, if you remember when Hillary Clinton did her Save America's Treasures tour, and she got a big donation from GE, General Electric. And then the Edison Foundation got a few other smaller donations in addition to that. And then the Park Service paid for a portion of it as well. Yeah.
Did you have issues in restoring that room between the original DC wiring, which I assume it had, and the AC wiring? Now has to happen.
Well, the wiring for these lamps, you see the lamps are on, those were changed in the 60s, so they're AC. We're not using any. There have been a few studies of the electrical system, and I think there are still some DC current set up. We're not using any of those. That's not really my realm, so I can't really answer your question very well. But
a DC source as well should it be needed for demonstrating equipment, older equipment, something like that?
We don't use it, no. The study was done for safety purposes, so we know what's there. But that's not really something I've been involved with. So I'm not the best person to ask. Okay, thanks.